12-3020, United States of America versus Tavon Lewis, appellant. Mr. Axum for the appellant, Ms. Winchester for the appellee.
Mr. Axum, we meet again.
Yes. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Tony Axum on behalf of Tavon Lewis, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The district court here imposed a substantively unreasonable sentence. The sentence was unreasonable because although it was within the guideline range, the guidelines don't take into consideration the lower mental functioning of Mr. Lewis or his severe substance abuse.
If he hadn't waived the right to seek a downward departure on the guidelines for diminished mental capacity, he would have been able to bring this very claim, right? I mean, that's really your argument. You're in a bit of a box. You didn't represent him at the plea agreement, but that's exactly what he... Had he not waived that, isn't that the argument you'd be making right now? And if you wouldn't, why wouldn't you be making that argument?
I would be making the argument, but if it had been denied even under the guidelines, I think we would be in the same position. Because the Section 5K2.13, the guideline departure provision, has certain conditions that must be met.
You don't think you would get relief under that? That wouldn't be your strongest argument, would be under the guidelines?
I think absolutely it would be the strongest. And we should... It is correct. It should not have been waived.
Yeah.
But in the face of that, I
guess that's what you're here to tell us, is arguments there might be marshaled. But.
It didn't stop the court from otherwise taking it into consideration. The guidelines are but one factor. So we know that the guideline range that the court relied on did not take that factor into account. The guidelines as a whole perhaps do, but only through the departure provision that was not applicable here. So that's why I say...
It wasn't applicable here because...
Because he
waived it.
Yes, he gave up the right to seek a departure on those grounds, but he didn't waive it under 3553A and those factors. So even when a departure...
Well, set that because it's an awfully narrow... I mean, you're trying to thread a needle here, and I appreciate that, but it's a pretty narrow opening, so...
Yes, it's not only... his severe mental functioning. I think it's the combination of his severe mental functioning and the substance abuse. The guidelines don't take really either of those two things into consideration.
It's not as if the district court didn't look at those, right? I mean, she was fully aware of the
circumstances. But it's not clear from her explanation of the sentence that those factors are reflected in the sentence.
Well, Rita, you don't have to give us she didn't have to make a discourse on it, and actually, in this case, didn't she go far beyond what the minimum requires?
She provided a good explanation for the sentence, and she considered many of the factors. Our argument here is not so much procedural that she didn't follow the procedures outlined in Rita and Gall. It's that the 77 months is simply greater than necessary to accomplish the statutory goals of sentencing. The guidelines themselves, the guideline range upon which she relied, I understand, again, that the guidelines overall taken that provide an avenue for granting, for taking into consideration diminished mental capacity. But at the end of everything, it's whether this sentence takes into account the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history characteristics of the defendant. And this sentence is greater than necessary because it does not adequately take into account the defendant's diminished mental capacity. The guidelines seek to embody the purposes of sentencing, but several of those purposes have reduced significance when you're dealing with somebody with diminished mental capacity. Certainly the retribution and deterrence do. Really the only core sentencing factor that drove this sentence was incapacitation. And just because the other ones were not as important does not mean that incapacitation should have been elevated. The sum of our argument, the the core is that someone of Mr. Lewis did not deserve the same sentence as someone of normal functioning mental capacity who didn't have the substance abuse issues that he did. We're saying that the sentence of 77 months was substantively unreasonable. His attorney did not ask for Mr. Lewis to be released or for probation. He asked for a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary, and a sentence of 48 months was sufficient but not greater than necessary in this case.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Ms. Winchester.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Amanda Winchester on behalf of the United States. We don't dispute that as a starting point, the guidelines primarily consider a defendant's offense and criminal history as a means of determining the appropriate guideline range. But the guidelines no longer explicitly disfavor consideration of a defendant's mental condition as part of determining an appropriate sentence. And really, we think that that argument in this case is beside the point in any event. First, because the defendant did in this case waive his right to seek a departure on that ground underneath the guidelines. And second, because in light of that, the district court in this case did exactly what it was required to do post-Booker and exactly what the defendant asked it to do, which was to consider...
Other than the waive provision, are there any other provisions of the guidelines that allow for consideration of diminished mental capacity? Is that the sole place that one can look to?
Well, no, and I think that's the point that I was attempting to make, which was that the defendant in this case asked the district court to consider the various 3553A factors as a variance independent of the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And the district court did exactly that. She considered whether the defendant's specific characteristics, including his mental capacity, warranted a variance below the guideline range based on her application of the 3553A factors.
So just hypothetically, if she had said, look, you've waived under the guidelines, you've waived your argument for diminished mental capacity, I don't need to look at what you're now presenting to me, would that have been a legal error on her part?
I think she was required to consider the 3553A factors, which in this case included...
I guess what I'm getting at is, do those factors provide an independent basis for granting some sort of departure from the guidelines, or is that swallowed up in the section of the guidelines that deals with diminished mental capacity?
I think she could have granted a downward variance based solely on her consideration of the defendant's mental condition as by virtue of its being a 3553A mm-hmm. factor in terms of the defendant's characteristics.
So the defendant gets a couple of bites at it, right? If he has diminished mental capacity, he'd be well served to make arguments under both sections.
I think you could make that request either by virtue of application of the guidelines, and that would be by way of departure, or by requesting, as the defendant did here, a variance, which would be a below-guideline sentence by virtue of application of the 3553A factors. The district court did exactly that in this case. There's no question that the district court recognized that the guidelines were not mandatory and that she had the authority to vary up or down from the appropriate guideline range in this case. She explicitly considered the 53A factors, including the defendant's mental condition. She simply found, after considering Dr. Levin's report, and all of the evidence that the defendant had presented, that his situation was more extreme than some, but not totally unique. And she, in her great discretion, declined to grant a downward variance on that basis. So what appellant essentially argues is that the district court should have given more weight to that factor, but a district court has wide latitude to weigh other factors, as it did in this case, which were countervailing to that consideration, which included defendants having the highest criminal history score at the age of 22, and his drug addiction and his lack of ability to obtain legitimate employment and other skills that would keep him from committing crimes in the future, including, as the government argued, the strong interest in protecting the public from future crimes by the defendant, quite apart from his diminished mental capacity. So
one thing that concerns me is her use of the phrase, this was extreme but not unique. I don't think there's anything that she said further about having to be unique. What do you think she meant by that? That the retardation would have to be so severe, or what?
I think she just meant that in consideration of all of the defendant's characteristics, that his situation was not sufficient to take his case out of the mine run of cases already considered in the applicable guideline range. And so although she quite clearly considered mental health as one of the factors, she did not find that factor alone sufficient grant a downward variance in this case. The district court did impose a sentence at the very low end of the applicable guideline range, and as Rita makes clear, where a district court sentence accords with the sentence that the Sentencing Commission deems appropriate in the mine run of cases, this court may presume that the sentence given is a reasonable one. So for all those reasons, if there are no further questions by the court, we would ask you to affirm the sentencing decision of the district court.
All right. Thank you. How much time does Mr. Axton have?
Mr. Axton had 4 minutes remaining.
Okay. Can I ask you one question? I know your office represented him. Did it at trial? Did it represent him in entering into this plea agreement?
No, that was a different attorney.
Okay.
In the middle of sentencing, Mr. Lewis was appointed new counsel, and that's when my office came in.
But he'd already waived?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I would just correct that Mr. Lewis was 25 years old at the time of sentencing, and it is correct that the court considered his criminal history, but counsel pointed out to the court that he had a series of very minor crimes, and I'd actually submit that the district court, that should have weighed. I don't want to say any criminal records don't usually weigh in favor, but given Mr. Lewis's low functioning intelligence, his criminal history was consistent with the problems he had, and I don't think was a basis for once again inflating the need for incapacitation. All of his crimes, while some were felonies, were not very serious felonies. I would just close with this court has recognized historically that people with lower functioning mental capacity do not commit crimes with the same criminal intent that people of normal functioning intelligence do, and for that reason don't deserve the same punishment, and that courts should look with lenity and leniency towards people such as Mr. Lewis, and that's not reflected in a within-guideline sentence.
Is he in the general prison population now?
He is.
Okay.
Thank you.